It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Kent Backus. Kent is the Director of International Trade and Market Access with National Cattlemen's Beef Association, NCBA, in Washington, D.C. Kent, great to see you.
It's good to see you again, Tony.
Okay. It's been kind of a good week for you, especially if we're talking beef and international trade and market access. And I think one that just jumps right to the top, China.
Absolutely. We're very excited about the recent announcement that after 13 years of being out of the Chinese market, U.S. beef access has been restored. USDA announced the final protocol on Monday, and now we are in the process of sending the first shipments of beef into China. We look forward to really getting our foot in the door and expanding that. I think it's important that people understand that, you know, the Chinese market's not one that's just going to open up overnight and be this overnight success for us. We've been banned there for 13 years. So now we have to really establish our name. We have to build that customer loyalty. Chinese customers or consumers put a lot into brand loyalty. So I think that as we have the opportunity to introduce our product to them, and we can start to build that name ID, that brand ID, we're going to have more customers down the road. But there's also some restrictions on the beef that we can send into China. It's important that people understand that as well. China has laws against the use of hormones and beta agonists. So that's something that we're going to have to work around, something we're going to have to deal with. So the cattle that we're producing that'll ultimately be in that beef supply chain, they can't have that presence. China's going to test for the presence of those hormones, both the synthetic and the naturally occurring hormones, but also beta agonists such as ractopamine. And those are technologies that are commonly used in our industry. They add a lot of value to our cattle. And so people are going to have to decide if they're going to, produce cattle for the Chinese market or for all of our other consumers. But it's not uncommon to have these different restrictions on our products. We see similar restrictions in other markets. But we also have an age-based restriction. The cattle can't be older than 30 months. We also have a traceability component. A lot of our export programs have an age and source verified component to it. Well, the difference with this is that, China has a lot of BSE concerns in their own country, and they have a lot of food safety concerns. And so part of satisfying their concerns about animal health were that the Chinese wanted us to have to trace every step of that animal throughout its life. Well, instead, we got them to agree to allow us to tag that animal at the place of its origin, its farm of birth, or at the port of entry, and from there, the packer can read that at the point of slaughter. And that's really to address their BSE-related concerns. But one component that I don't think a lot of people have talked about, it's very important, it's very significant, is heaven forbid we ever have another BSE case, China's not going to close its doors to the U.S. If you think about it, that's the problem we're in now, is that in 2003 we had one case, and we've been shut out of that market ever since. We've had no recourse, no ability to get back in. But China has agreed that they will keep their doors open to the U.S. market as long as we keep our negligible risk status, and that's the designation we have from the World Organization for Animal Health. And it's one of the safest designations that there is. So there are going to be some restrictions on what we can send into China. That means we're going to have a smaller volume of cattle that are eligible at first. But as we start to develop this market, I think the market itself is going to be very attractive for us. If you look at China overall, they represent 1.4 billion people. They represent a middle class that's larger than the entire U.S. population, and they're already poised to become the biggest beef import market in the world. Right now, they're second only to the United States, and they're only barely behind us. Beef demand in China is growing, and if we don't get our foot in the market now, if we don't get then it's going to be very hard for us to compete down the road. So even if people choose not to participate in the production for the Chinese market, I think they're going to benefit from everyone else who does make that choice, just because there's so much beef demand that's unmet throughout the world. And so we have a tremendous opportunity ahead of us in China, and that's something we're very excited about.
So some will ask as well. I mean, it will come back down to this. For some producers, they'll say, how can I do these things, and will I see profit at the end? As far as the going through the verification program, obviously, if you're opening the door to a major market like this, there will be benefits.
Well, that's the way we see it. I mean, it's like, again, it's not going to be an overnight success in this market. It's going to take us some time to build that market. But, you know, people have had these similar concerns when we were in Japan, when Japan put a 20-month age restriction on us in BSE. Because of BSE, people wondered, well, is that ever going to be a lucrative market for us again? Well, as we gain that consumer confidence, Japan lifted those restrictions. They've removed a lot of those restrictions that we used to have 5 and 6 years ago. Now it's our top export market. If you look at Korea, you know, in 2008, in downtown Seoul, there's about 1 million people in the streets in a candlelight vigil protesting the presence of U.S. beef, the reintroduction of U.S. beef into that market. Now, Korea is our second largest export market. It's a billion-dollar market for us. Who would have saw that in 2008? So I think we have to be careful not to be too cautious, because I think once the market determines that that's going to be a good place for us, I think people are going to find that there's a lot of opportunity there. So we have to be patient. It's also going to take time for USDA to certify a lot of the operations, the packing facilities that'll be shipping into China. So there's a lot of growing pains we'll have to go through to get there. But in the long run, we can't avoid the fact that this is going to be the biggest import market for beef in the world. And if we're not going after it, then we're going to lose out.
So let's talk about a market right now that is big for you, and it's your neighbor to the south. You have a free trade agreement with Mexico through the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. That renegotiation, that clock's ticking, and in August, it's time to play.
Well, you know, we're a little concerned about renegotiating NAFTA and potentially jeopardizing the access we have to both Canada and Mexico. NAFTA's been a tremendous free trade agreement for us. We couldn't have asked for better terms. I don't know how we can improve upon duty-free access, unfettered, unrestricted access to the Canadian and Mexican markets. I mean, we can send any product in an unlimited amount with a zero duty. So I think, you know, we're a little concerned about potentially jeopardizing that. We've made those concerns well known to the administration. You know, here in about a month, we should know the scope of the negotiations, what all will be renegotiated. That's something the administration has to convey to Congress. And so we'll be looking in mid-July to see what the terms of renegotiation will be, kind of what their goals will be. We've been pretty clear to USDA, to USTR, and the White House that we don't need to mess with the progress and the success of the beef sector and the cattle sector. Again, those are two $1 billion markets for us. We don't want to jeopardize those. We also don't want to see NAFTA as a vehicle to bring back some of the other failed policies of the past, specifically mandatory country of origin labeling. Mandatory country of origin labeling, or MCOL, was the law of the land for 6 years. It did absolutely nothing to benefit our producers, and instead it led to a potential trade war with Canada and Mexico. Had Congress not repealed that failed marketing program, we would be in the middle of a $1 billion trade war with Canada and Mexico. Now, you tell me, why does that make sense to bring back a failed policy like that? But the proponents of MCOL are trying to do that. So it's important that all of our producers out there, that they engage, that they make it well known that we do not need failed policies like that in NAFTA and any kind of renegotiation. And instead, we need to keep the scope of the negotiations as narrow as possible so that they can move as quickly as possible, because we don't need our government really focused much on NAFTA as we need them focused on Japan. When the Trump administration decided to walk away from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we walked away from some very good terms in our leading export market. So even though last year we sold $1.5 billion of beef to the Japanese, we sold it with a 38.5% tariff attached to it. The only solution in front of us right now is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, where we would see that tariff go from 38.5% to 9% over 16 years. That's the greatest market access ever negotiated. But the administration's walked away from that, and they said, we're not going to pursue TPP. So all of our other competitors who are still part of TPP are still moving forward with the TPP talks, which means they could enjoy those tariffs, those lower tariffs. It's going to make it hard for us to compete in Japan. So if the Trump administration's not going to pursue a bilateral agreement, or I'm sorry, if they're not going to pursue the TPP, we need them to prioritize a bilateral free trade agreement with the Japanese. Otherwise, it's going to be very tough for us to stay on top in the Japanese market.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier the mandatory country of origin labeling. And some might look at the deal with China and think this is country of origin labeling. It's a voluntary, and there's nothing that stops producers from doing voluntary, is there?
No, I think it's very important to realize that we already have labeling programs that are out there. Those are market-driven, voluntary programs. Mandatory country of origin labeling was a government-mandated marketing program, which meant that the government took all the proceeds. Didn't mean that producers were going to see the proceeds. If by the government putting a program in competition with private marketing programs, that means that the government is picking the winners and losers. It means that makes it less advantageous for us to enroll in those premium-based marketing programs. If consumers want marketing, if they want labeling on their product, they're going to pay for it, and the market will dictate that. We don't need the government to dictate that. Mandatory country of origin labeling is not a food safety program. This is not something run through FSIS. It's not something that improves overall consumer confidence. It's a marketing program that's been sold as a bill of goods to both consumer groups and to producers that this is going to be good for everybody. But if that were the case, it would have been successful already, and we would have avoided a major trade war. We don't need to bring back these failed policies.
Ken, it's always great to see you. Congratulations on the work this week, and good luck in the weeks ahead.
Thank you very much.
Kent Backus is Director of International Trade and Market Access with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.